Any opposition?
There's one correction on the adjournment. I think you have Murphy down as making a motion, which you can't, he's not statutory, so somebody else should obey the motion and second it.
So I guess we didn't adjourn.
We're trying to get one up on that.
Now we have a bigger problem.
Trying to get one up on that.
We never recorded from that date on.
That'll break a table.
Bunch of folders. Thanks, Pierre.
With that, we'll adjust that, and no opposition, those are approved. And we'll go right into the report of the budget.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for a very interesting start to our 2014 group council meeting. I'll try to be very, very brief in my overview comments, but there are just a couple of broad areas that I thought it was important that we have an opportunity to bring you up to date on. As you know, we have articulated over the last 14 months or so that I've been president of this great university, our desire to move this university to the next level of excellence. And during the inauguration, we put essentially four benchmarks on the table that we will utilize as the broad framework around how we will go about achieving that excellence. And just want to highlight the progress that we're making and the process that we're using to advance these four stakes in the ground. And I'm going to talk perhaps a bit more about two of them. And what I like to do is, during the course of maybe perhaps at our next meeting, we can take a deeper dive on some of these issues, particularly regarding some of the ones that impact student life, the academic side of the house, and a couple of other associated issues before the academic year ends. I think it would be very helpful for us to spend some time talking about the new enrollment management strategy that we're rolling out and how that links systematically to the new academic programs that we plan on rolling out as well, because both are absolutely critically important strategies to enhance the student experience at the university level, which is tied to increasing more non-resident and international students, and hopefully will improve student satisfaction. And the other component of that is what we plan to do in adding new academic programs. So, as it relates to the enrollment management piece, we are very aggressively pursuing an enrollment strategy that will allow us to systematically do a much better job than what I think we've done in the last 5 or 6 years, where I think most of you know that relative to the other SUNY research centers, our enrollment actually decreased, where the other university centers' enrollment went up substantially. In fact, it's always good to have some object in the mirror that you look back at to see how much is gaining on you. The last time I had my staff to check, approximately back in December, Binghamton University, which had always historically been, 2,000 to 3,000 students less than you all did. If you count all in, Binghamton is only less than 1,000 students less than enrollment at the University of Albany. Yeah. And my good friend Harvey Stinger there articulated in this State of the University address a couple weeks ago that by the end of 2020, there will be over 20,000 students. I tell you that because I think it's important for us to keep that in mind. Certainly is not our goal, and it's not our desire to just grow enrollment just for the sake of doing so, just for some bragging rights about the number of students. But I do think it's critically important that we think about our enrollment management strategy in a context that this university has the capacity to accommodate a significant number of new students. And there are certain cohort of students that we have not been able to attract in the past. These new degree programs will provide that opportunity. But at the same time, we haven't had an aggressive enrollment management strategy that was designed to bring in high ability students from other parts of the country. We've been very much dependent to the extent that up until last year, about 92% of our students came from the state of New York. Now it's about 88%, and you all know the demographic shifts that are occurring The only two, there are only two counties of the 64 counties in the state of New York where the way that a lot of the folks that measure this stuff are looking at are the number of four-year-olds that are in that category, the number of four-year-olds 10 years ago. And the four-year-old cohort is decreasing significantly, which means that the number of young people that are going to be available from the state of New York to attend a university at Albany is going to be declining precipitously over the next decade. So my point is, what has gotten us here won't get us to where we need to be in the future. And so we keep talking about a different enrollment strategy, not because of the financial implications, but also because of the programmatic implications and the long-term vitality of this university as a comprehensive research university. So this is something, from my perspective as president, is a big deal. And so we would like to have an opportunity to come maybe to the May meeting and give you a detailed update on enrollment management strategy and solicit your support, your questions, and that you all can gain a deeper understanding of why this is absolutely critical that we do this right. We don't have an option, because to stay still means that we will surely lose ground just because of demographic shifts alone. So anyway, I can't emphasize that enough, and I think this may be one of the topics that you would appreciate really having an opportunity to better understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, and what benefit it's going to have.
Now, yes, Robert, were you including that the what actually happens in the enrollment process?
Absolutely. We will talk about what happens in the enrollment process, our current practices, how we modified those practices over the last 12, 14 months, how we are strategically doing things that we haven't done before, like hiring recruiters in targeted areas and places of the country where there is a growth in those four-year-old cohorts. And where we can anticipate, because of the price point that we charge for tuition, we really need to leverage that opportunity to be more aggressive in recruiting students from the Southeast, from parts of the Midwest, parts of the West, where these demographics are actually growing.
I think that's a great football topic program. Council.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of thing we clearly need to make sure the council gets a chance to understand and weigh in on and support.
Just a couple of words, and I don't know if it makes sense, but for incorporation in May, one, I just received an email this past week from the Alumni Association where they were sponsoring high school
fairs
and so forth, and a couple of them were in New Jersey. I think something like that, maybe coupled with guidance counselor visits or whatever, might make a lot of sense, because obviously New Jersey is a stone's throw away, and we look pretty attractive to people from New Jersey.
That's part of the strategy, is to be more aggressive.
We need to all be talking to each other.
That's part of the strategy, Pat, is to recruit more aggressively in border states as well as part of the strategy, not just California, Nevada, and places like that, or
it's
Georgia.
It's the first time I'd ever seen them do anything outside of New York.
I noticed that, too.
I just note that the Alumni Association, I don't know if anybody's talking to each other, but
we are talking to each other. Actually, this is the third year we are doing it.
Oh, okay.
Third year we are doing this, but we are becoming more active in publicizing it. We targeted also Connecticut and Massachusetts area, and it works twofold. Our alumni are always hearing from me, and for obvious reasons, but this also gives them an opportunity to participate in something other than just giving, so getting them closer to university. Right. So we're working very closely with the admissions office, and wherever they want us to go, we go to do that.
The other point I was going to bring up, and I don't know if it makes any sense, but you know, they have these P-TECH high schools. Have you heard about these P-TECH programs? And you know, since STEM across the system, I know we're trying to recruit more STEM students, and obviously the P-TECH schools are STEM students, and the kids come out of those programs with, in effect, an associate's degree in science and so forth. And maybe if we had a scholarship program or something, that if you can graduate from a P-TECH school somewhere in some proximity to Albany, you get an automatic pass to, you know, to come to school there. Mm-hmm. So students that don't want to go work at that point but want to continue their education, this might be a way to bring them in and improve our STEM numbers. I don't know if that would be appealing to folks, but it's an idea.
Yes, yeah. But as far as the scholarship, the governor has already proposed, a measure to give a full scholarship to STEM students. So that basically.
Well, this would only need 2 years because right. they're already through the.
That's correct.
So
that would work.
Some marketing or some deal like that would be a great way to.
I think that's a legislative issue, I believe, because I brought this up with the chancellor actually 2 weeks ago about the Youth of the Year program for the Boys and Girls Club, and saying that it's a pretty well-established program, pretty well-known, and I said, how can we somehow sponsor the Youth of the Year, and basically came back and said, you can't do that except for through legislative action. You can't. She can't say that I can give a scholarship to that program. But of course, you said if I want to pay for it, then certainly take credit for it.
Maybe since philanthropy is also one of the other things,
right.
is maybe that's one of our scholarship programs for right. people to contribute to, is something along these lines.
Well, you're absolutely right, and it ties into the next point I want to get into, and that is the new degree programs that we are rolling out, because Albany has a very strong reputation as it relates to humanities program, language programs, and some of the other social sciences programs. But where we are less known and where we have opportunity to build capacity is in the STEM areas. And that's one of the reasons we are proposing, as part of the overall strategies, to significantly increase the number of engineering degree programs we offer. So let me just talk about that. I think you have excellent, the points you made, Pat, are excellent, and it clearly needs to be part of our strategy going forward, because as the other state we talked about, that is another vehicle for attracting a type of student that clearly have not been interested in UAL being, candidly, because we did not have the programs they were interested in. I think you all know more than once I've talked about the fact that there is no public engineering option in the entire capital region at this juncture, other than what the School of Nanoscale Science and Engineering offer. There's no public options. They're all private. And the shifts that are going on in the country at the moment are dramatically different than a decade ago, where families were willing to sacrifice, take equity out of their homes to pay for their kid to go to RPI or one of the other private engineering schools, even after RPI would give them a scholarship. Now those families are saying, no, sorry, we can't afford, you have to go to a public school.
And RPI is like the third most expensive school in the country or something.
And the other part that we're hearing loud and clear, as I said before, from our corporate partners in the capital region, that are constantly asking the question, why doesn't UAL offer certain type of engineering degrees? And you all know the history behind this. There are policies and statutes from the state ed department that basically says we can't, basically states pretty unequivocally that UAL shall not offer degrees in certain areas. We worked our way through most of that. And so now, we are very, very clear and have making significant progress on our first engineering program that has been approved by SUNY Central, which will be a computer and network engineering. It's how it was originally framed. It has a lot of support from SUNY Central. It's probably going to end up being more computer engineering, and we're probably not going to put as much emphasis on the networking piece, because what we're hearing from our corporate partners, that's probably less appealing than just computer engineering that deals more with just both software and hardware is what seems to be the most interesting thing at this juncture. We've assembled a very aggressive strategy that involves consultation with some of the finest engineering schools in the country. We brought in consultants from the University of Illinois, a computer engineering school, and we're also getting the advice of an innovative engineering program that was started 10, 15 years ago over in Massachusetts, the Olin School of Engineering, and which has a very interesting approach to this. Not only theory, but the students also must spend at least a year working
in their in a firm in their area particularly interested in. So our idea is how do you keep creating hybrid between those two very strong research-based approach and more practical hands-on approach that hopefully will allow these students to come out of you all being ready for the workplace and be as attractive, if not more attractive, than students coming out of some of the private options that exist today.
I think that's great. When will you start that?
They're working on the curriculum now, and I think the first students, they're going to start in fall of 2015. And the way that we're structuring this, we thought it would be more cost-effective and more practical to start with transfer students. And so we expect our first group of students to be juniors that are transferring from Hudson Valley, Schenectady, and other community colleges. And then the following academic year, we'll bring in freshmen into the program. So we're looking at like 25 or 30 transfer students the first year and then build up from there. So these, I'm taking a lot of time talking about this because this is the future of this university, and it's perhaps more important for me to give you kind of an overview of these efforts rather than talking about some of the other wonderful things we're doing. But this is big. This is a big deal, and we see this as the catalyst or the nucleus, if you will, that we plan to build a broader engineering effort around that's going to expand our existing work that goes on in the College of Computing and Information. And so I think it'll be important that we have time as a part of the council meetings for you to understand the potential and the process that's involved here. We're not doing this in isolation from potential employers. We are creating an advisory committee that involves people from places like Global Foundries, folks that know what the current and future employment opportunities are, and we're going to utilize their expertise to help shape these degree programs. So we're very excited about that.
Accenture has been a pretty big supporter of sort of MIS-type system stuff in the School of Business, so you may want to include them. So, I mean, they're obviously it's more the software,
sure.
not the hardware. But given that they're already, I mean, I think they have an Accenture room, and you know what I mean, and so forth, there may be some cross-fertilization there.
The other area in terms of academic expansion you will also hear about, we think that we've missed opportunities to really advance our allied health program. We are fortunate that we have a very fine school of public health that's unique in perspective that is the only one in the country we know of. That's a joint venture between a department of health and an academic department or college at a university. And so now we have been rethinking the kinds of degree programs we offer there, and it's very, very clear that there are some opportunities as well to create programs that's going to attract students into very high demand areas of and all aspects of healthcare, whether you're talking about occupational therapy or whatever it might be, or actually from that all the way up to medicine. We are contemplating modifying our current very, very successful one of the largest programs in the College of Arts Arts and Sciences at the moment is a Bachelor of Sciences in Health. The Human Biology degree program. That's the one that's very, very successful. A lot of demand for that particular degree program. We are thinking about realigning that program to be a Bachelor of Science in Health Sciences, which more broadly prepares students to go into any aspect of allied health, medical school, or whatever it might be. And so Provost Phillips and her group are looking at that as well as potential of developing and bringing greater clarity about maybe other kinds of programs that can help drive a greater relationship with places like SUNY Downstate. And that's the next thing I want to talk briefly about. I think you all know that thing is. Finally, I think there's light at the end of the tunnel for SUNY's assistant administration to get itself out from under Litch. That's been bleeding at $13 to $14 million a month. And concurrent with all others, we've been working with Downstate to try to figure out what we can do and in terms of a shared services arrangement to help them further reduce their costs and at the same time increase a linkage with the medical school where we can advance some of the allied health programs that we've been talking about.
And so we'll keep you informed on that as well. You've heard about Open SUNY, the Chancellor's online initiative. They're rolling out a couple of funded pilot programs for this effort. We're deeply involved with it and will remain deeply involved because we do think it's going to provide an exciting opportunity where going forward, there won't be any excuse for a student anywhere in the SUNY system for not graduating on time because they couldn't get a course. Because now you will not be limited to just the courses on New Albany's campus, or Buffalo, or Binghamton campus. And the issue of transferability hopefully will be resolved. And that's the biggest thing I see out of all of this, is the opportunity for the nearly, you know, half million students in the SUNY system to be able to access anytime critical courses that it needs, that they need in order to graduate in a timely fashion. And so we will continue to keep you updated on that as well. You probably heard the governor, as a part of the state address, talked about creating this statewide early warning weather system called MESANET. And just to remind you, this is one of the strategies that, this is not an isolated strategy. This grew out of our NY SUNY 2020 proposal to create this initiative. It's a public-private partnership with a private company that provides a lot of the equipment that's necessary to create these weather stations. And you also heard the governor talk about it not only in the state of the state, but the day before when Joe Biden was here following up on Hurricane Sandy issues, the governor also mentioned it. And if you saw the slide presentation, we were very pleased to see you all being mentioned, as well as our School of Atmospheric Science, the Department of Homeland Security. And the check is all but in the bank on this, about $18 million. To grow our current weather detection system from 27 sites to 127 sites. And the governor is really 100% behind this because there's very compelling data that shows that the state of New York is more likely to experience one of these catastrophic weather events than perhaps any other state in the nation. And so,
I wasn't aware of that. We're in
the hot
hurricane season.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Right over your house. Wow.
This is why the governor is really hot on this, because this thing will be completely integrate these 127 sites. It's going to help with early prediction, so that the state can do a better job of deploying resources to these potential disaster areas. So we're very excited about this. You know about BioHarvest, so I won't go into any more detail about that, but I think we're making progress for Dean in terms of BioHarvest. Sometime during the course of this year, building this 35,000 square foot facility where they will locate and create and build a bioreactor, as well as locate the sales force. Essentially, the whole operation will be moving from Tel Aviv, where I think there's limited opportunity to market their product, to the U.S., where they see a much greater market potential as well. This is not just something that's going to benefit this company and its bottom line. It's going to drive innovative research at the University of Albany. It's going to provide an opportunity for the clinical trials that are associated with this product to be done not only by our Cancer Research Center. Albany Med is going to be a site upstate and downstate also. So it's going to put us on the map, if you will, in terms of doing innovative cutting-edge research in what is now called functional foods. And we also envision creating a center on functional foods. And this is going to be an opportunity, again, for University of Albany to distinguish yourself. Just a couple of other issues to update you on a question I'm sure you all are curious about: what progress we're making with the MOU between College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering and New Albany. And you recall one of the critical questions that I put forth the last time we talked about this. I told you that it was difficult for us to think too hard about an MOU until it was a better understanding of what the academic model was going to be for Nano going forward. Even though this has not been publicly announced, the governor did kind of slip a slide in his presentation that showed up in Utica, this thing called CNSCIT. And so that tells you what the academic model is going to be. The Board of Trustees will be looking at a proposal or passing a resolution to create a merger between CNSE and SUNY IT, because that is effectively the only way that they can meet the goals of CNSE becoming degree granting, and at the same time not create a 65th campus, which they were very adamant that they weren't going to support that. They supported the ability of CNSE to become independent from you all being a degree granting, but not in a way that required the creation of a 65th campus. So with that knowledge in mind and understanding what assets CNSE can attract or use from Utica or SUNY IT, we've been having a conversation that has resolved pretty much the areas that will be included in an MOU between CNSE and UOB. It's going to focus on providing approximately 18 credit hours of liberal education requirement that we'll be providing for those CNSE students. It also provides opportunities for us to provide dormitory space, food service, and recreational activities for those students that are CNSE students. And health services. Thank you very much again. That's a critical and important one. And what we try to do as a part of this approach is, number one, do what's best for the students to make this whole transition process as seamless as possible for students. And one of the things that we did resolve so was that students would have the option, particularly those students admitted this fall, would have the option of either getting a CNSE degree or a degree from the University of Albany. And we thought that was critically important, as well as a couple of other details that yet remain to be worked out. But just kind of where we stand at this juncture, and we are getting close where I anticipate that we hope that we can have an MOU that is mutually agreed upon and signed off between NANO, University of Albany, and the Chancellor's Office no later than the April Board of Trustees meeting.
What does that mean? What does that mean? The merger of CNSE and SUNY IT?
Nobody knows.
How's the difference of we all being in CNSE?
Yeah, I mean, what's the benefit? That's a naive question politically, I suspect. But
it's not a naive question. These are fundamental questions that people are going to be asking once this becomes public, because it's going to be hard. And I'm just talking candid here.
It's going to be hard to explain that.
It's going to be hard to explain, because people are going to ask, well, why wasn't you all being good enough? You know, and they folks are going to be asking those questions. But, you know, that's...
they'll have to answer them.
Not for me to answer.
So normally in a merger, one's on top. Is one on top?
Yeah.
Yes, CNSE.
Is on top.
Yes.
Yeah, because one of their guys is the acting president at SUNY IT right now.
That should have given you some... Yeah. So CNSE essentially will have oversight for all of the programs that occur, the colleges and programs that currently exist at Utica. So essentially, the only way I see this working is essentially that campus will essentially be managed for all practical purposes from Fuller Road. I don't know what they're going to do about staffing there, but essentially, to be candid about it, you know, Lane Kelly Earls will have oversight for both Fuller Road and SUNY IT. That's the model going forward. He and I have talked about this, pros and cons of this, how this can be done, and how he plans to go about managing all that. One of the things that we were concerned once it became crystal, we suspected that this was the only way forward with this for quite some time now. What the greatest concern for this council and for this university is to have some sense of assurance that out of this merger and out of this MOU, that we're not creating a situation where now engineering degree programs in particular that are offered at Utica, all of a sudden now will be offered from Fuller Road, which will directly compete with what we're trying to build here in our own engineering effort. I don't care particularly what is offered at Utica, because they already have some engineering programs, that's fine. But we can't have from Fuller Road all of a sudden they're offering computer engineering, if you get the gist of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's just not... you know, that's not something that I can agree to, and that's something that will be extremely harmful to University at Albany. And all along in all of this, the core principles we put on the table is that we support the the principle of CNS is becoming more efficient, but it can't be done at our expense, and it can't be done in a way that's going to do long-term harm to universal health. That's where I draw the line. And so I'm just informing you that that's the model. These are the issues that we're trying to deal with. And I think over the last couple of months, we've made significant progress in helping CNSE folks to understand the cost of instruction, what it actually costs to educate a student. And I still think that there is a little bit of concern that the numbers that we're putting on the table, what it actually costs, are inflated in some way. And I can assure you they absolutely aren't inflated. These are the numbers that SUNY system academic administration uses across the entire system. And so these are some of the challenges and some of the opportunities there as well. And we are on the positive, or the more the side of this that involves the future of UAlbany, as we're trying to protect our academic niche. We are looking at ways to more seamlessly and positively collaborate with CNSE as well on some of the issues where mutual collaboration will be, where collaboration will be mutually beneficial both to CNSE and to UAlbany.
When does all of that become public?
When is all of what
becomes sort of public now? It was in the paper yesterday.
It's
my understanding that the Board of Trustees will vote on or pass a resolution at their March meeting. Is that right?
I think it was in the Utica paper yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is one of the best.
The worst kept secrets in the last 3 months.
Right. Everybody's not. The SUNY Utica faculty have voted on this several months ago.
Yeah, I heard about it.
Yeah, people, you know, and so we decided it was nonsense to keep, you know, toying around what is the worst kept secret in the state of New York. Because, you know, we just need to be candid about this, because I needed to know what we were dealing with, what the model was before we were going to deploy our financial team. You know, Steve folks, Vettis folks have spent an enormous amount of time trying to wrestle this thing to the ground in a way. And we were very, 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 very clear that we, because Elaine and I started with, you provide everything that you've always provided. And I said, no, time out, Elaine. You may not want that, because I knew the scenario was going to be that once they got into this and learned a lot, they were going to find out, wait a minute, why are we paying you to do this when I can get it from SUNY IT?
Right.
And so we've been trying to be very clear about only providing those services where you can't do it virtually.
Right.
Because of proximity, you know, like dormitories and healthcare and rec sport. If you don't get it from UAlbany, you can get it from some other private schools in the area, but it's going to cost you a hell of a lot more.
Right.
And clearly, I don't think there's an interest in building some of this capacity over Fuller Road. So,
and that's when you, no room it, I mean, minor detail, when you said rec sports, it's rec sports. Somebody can't be on a lacrosse team.
No, they can't.
So that's all.
That's what we have to.
Is that on our volition? Say if it's on our side. I mean, I'm asking, what's good for us? There might be a player that you may want that happens to be there.
Those SAT scores, like,
doesn't matter.
I don't want those guys. You don't want any of them.
All I'm saying, I always like to have optionality. I mean, I'm sure it's
one place where there's no option. If you're not a UAlbany student, we provide services to other students all the time. We do it for St. Rose. We have an entire dormitory that we rent out to St. Rose. That's basically what we propose to them. We will give you 100 beds in one of our dormitories, provide your transportation back and forth. So I'm just kind of giving you a window into some of the things that's in the MOU.
Right.
But there are certain things where we cannot treat them as UAlbany students. Certain issues regarding library access is one.
Oh, really?
That's one big one. There's only limited things that we can do. Yeah, they can come in. We're not going to put a door up and check IDs, but they will have limited access to some of our library sessions.
Yeah.
It's just the way the licensing issues and the structures are formed.
But
so we're trying to make this as seamless as possible, but there are certain things we can't do.
The academic portion of the 18 hours, that'll go away at some point, right?
That will go away at some point, and we basically told them on the front end, are you sure you want us to do this? Because they could get these 18 credit hours, particularly with Open SUNY, they can get them from any place. They don't have to get them from us. And they can actually have the ability to create their own general ed requirements. Every campus has the ability to decide, and they could decide that they don't need the 18 credits now that we have the capacity to deliver.
Or they could send Utica faculty down and teach on their own campus.
They could very well do that.
So can we go up a notch we'll bridge a little bit into the discussion we're going to have later, but what's our role? What's the council's role with respect to this issue? So
that was my point, because the resolution that we passed was somewhat open-ended, that we were going to come back and visit this, and that happened the day after the Board of Trustees did it, and I didn't know if there was another resolution that would have to, some action we would also have to take.
Yeah, just looking at the role, it would seem that we have a dog in this race somewhere.
You
right?
do, and that's why I'm spending as much time as I am making sure you understand what's going on here, because, you know, the discussion we were going to have on the front end is about the role and responsibility. I see this as one of the issues that you have responsibility, you understand what's going on, and to voice your opinion and, you know, help us shape how we go about doing this. We had to start the process of negotiating and going back and forth and educating about the pros and cons of what was good for us, what's good for them, and how we can do this in a way that's as seamless as possible. But I think that is, Mr. Chairman, a very fundamental question. What's the role of the council in this issue? Vetting and having the opportunity to come back and talk to you about the MOU, because this is the kind of issue I think that you need to be engaged with.
Claire? I have a question.
Yes.
So in regards to like students who are in the CMC program, and you said that they since they can grant their own degrees now, would those degrees still count as legitimate bachelor's degrees for students, or would that still have the time to
sign in to
you
all? Well, I think what you're getting at, for those students who are currently in CNSE, they can decide if they want to stay. Those that are admitted in 2014 can decide, and I'm not sure if it includes 2015 or not.
I don't know if you actually address that.
I don't think so.
But
I think until they have their own accreditation.
Yeah.
Once they have their own accreditation, which may be, to be perfectly candid with you, could be 2 years away.
15-16.
It could be 15-16 before they're actually, you will have a situation where those students, and don't get me wrong, this is not unheard of in engineering programs. Before I left Minnesota, I helped build a program with one of the other university systems where for the first 2 years, it was not an accredited program. Students still enrolled. The goal is that you hope eventually those students can say that they've graduated from an accredited program. But it is totally possible within ABET, the entity that does the accreditation of engineering programs, to allow you to start the degree program and give you, students can apply, they get financial aid, the whole nine yards. But it normally takes a year or two to get the accreditation in place. So students that are currently enrolled, students that will enroll in the fall of this year would be graduating from the accredited program that's already accredited. See, it's all the program is already accredited, but it's under you already.
Mm-hmm.
So once it moves, then they lose that accreditation. They have to apply for their own accreditation in conjunction under the auspices or the already, and this is the other reason that they're moving, I think, to an already accredited university.
Right.
If they were not moving to they were going to do this on their own and independent, it would be much more complicated to do. And so this will some way make the accreditation process easier because SUNY IT is already accredited in certain engineering programs. Did I answer your question? Okay.
No, because I was just wondering, because like, I'm thinking about, because I know I have friends who are in the nanoscale program, and I was just wondering if it, like, is there any such a bet that, like, after they finish their program, they kind of feel like they wasted their time because their degree wouldn't really count. Like, yes, they're getting a degree because they finished this, but because it's not accredited, it wouldn't be reciprocated in, like, companies or other universities as something of, you know, value, whereas a UAlbany degree would definitely be, you know, transferred over and
sure.
other universities accept it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's one of those questions where the industry has been, as a recent study I just looked at yesterday, where I think there's not complete agreement about value of degrees and the whole issue of accreditation, where you graduate from, et cetera. But normally, most degree engineering schools clearly know that it's very important to have those programs accredited. Otherwise, I do think you get into questions about being able to go to graduate school, and also being accessible to employment opportunities from certain companies.
But you know, just, and I'm not sure this is clear, my understanding is there's two levels of accreditation. Albany's accredited by this regional group called Middle School. And that would include CNSE.
Yes.
As, and I don't know, SUNY IT has accreditation from probably that group as well.
Yeah.
All right.
And they probably also have ABET accreditation for the, I assume they have ABET accreditation.
Engineering school, professional schools like engineering or business or medical or whatever, have separate accrediting bodies. And CNSE, I don't believe, is accredited by that separate engineering body. So somebody who goes to, say, MIT, not only do they have the regular school accreditation they get, they also have the engineering accreditation. A CNSE graduate today does not. They have, you know, your basic educational accreditation, but not necessarily the engineering accreditation.
Right. So a reminder, and not specific to that comment, but I don't think this is just going to be a flash in the pan once this really becomes mainstream. So I know that there's not a long waiting list for the recordings of our meetings, but I'm guessing that there may be once that happens. So I just want to remind everybody that I don't know that it will be unusual for our friends to be listening to the entire recording to get individuals' comments on what's happening here. Just this cautionary note.
I guess before we move that topic, what's the enrollment now at CNSE?
About 250 undergraduates and graduate students.
And they probably plan to grow, I assume.
I'm sorry?
They probably plan to grow that program?
Yes.
So what would that do to your capacity to provide service? I mean, if you house 250 CNSE students, well, then you can't take an additional...
We've made it clear that we've offered to provide 100 beds.
Oh, all right. So okay. It's 100.
Yes. Because you're talking graduate students don't typically learn the kind of facilities we have, and not all undergraduates. So we're probably providing beds for, what, maybe 100 of 100, total of 135, 140 undergraduate students.
Right.
And we made it clear that we are doing this at the expense of providing beds for our own students, because as you all are very much aware, we have to put students over across the Washington Avenue in a hotel every fall.
Yeah.
And this is only going to exacerbate that problem. But we're trying to be good partners here and good citizens, and trying to help this, again, with the primary goal of not making this as seamless as possible for the undergraduate students that will be going through this transition. I didn't mean for us to get this deep in the weeds on this, but I do think it's a healthy conversation, and you know, I stand by anything that I've said as a part of the public record on this. These are real questions. These are fundamental issues that I think, as president, I have to deal with, and I think as members of this council, it's important for you to be as well.
Any other questions on that? Anything else on the president's report? I do have one. Does anybody have anything else?
I have one request. Robert, everybody in the room has met Leanne. We have a couple of members on the phone who haven't.
Yes.
And just to make it part of the record, could you introduce your new chief of staff?
Yeah, it's my pleasure to introduce my new chief of staff, who is not so new anymore. She's been here for 2.5 weeks now.
Oh, yeah.
And talk about baptism by fire. Mm-hmm. I think clearly she's gone through that. But Dr. Leanne Workula is a resident of Minnesota, initially born up near the Canadian border, if I remember correctly, from a good Finnish family. Attended the University of Minnesota, both undergraduate, right, and graduate school. I met her when she was in graduate school in the College of Education and Human Development, when she was pursuing her doctorate in Higher Education Administration. She actually worked in the provost's office as an RA. That's when I first had a chance to work with her. And when the provost became the president, she worked very closely with the provost and myself. And the provost was a guy who's now president of the University of Vermont. She worked with the two of us on a number of initiatives, but the one that we remember mostly was the strategic planning process that involved 34 task forces. So I knew if she could manage 34 task forces at a place like University of Minnesota, she had great skill set. And so that's where we had a chance to work closely together. And then she went on, left the president's or provost office, I don't remember the timeline, and went to the Carson School of Management, which is University of Minnesota Business School, where she was the assistant dean and chief of staff to the dean of the business school. Then I think there was a change in leadership. Dean decided to go to Michigan, and Leanne decided to come to the Big Apple. And I kind of lost track of her and didn't really realize she was out here until probably about maybe a little bit more than less than a year ago, where she has been working as a consultant with AKA Consulting. AKA Consulting is the consulting firm that worked with Chancellor Zemfer on her SUNY 2020 strategy. And she was doing some work on another project for the Chancellor on this Cradle to Career Alliance when I got a call from her wanting to interview me on behalf of the Chancellor. And I knew that there was only one Leanne Merkley in the world, so I knew it had to be her. And so the rest is history, they say. So you're talking about someone that is very well qualified to do this job. She's already demonstrated that in the 2.5 weeks that she's been here, because not only, I've talked mostly about her higher ed experience, but Leanne also worked for the Minnesota Timberwolves in marketing. She knows intercollegiate athletics. She's done an enormous amount of volunteer work in the community. And I can tell you, hopefully you can tell by my lengthy introduction, that I'm extremely pleased and overjoyed that she's here. And she's already demonstrated great capacity to help us think about how to advance this university. So we're glad to have her.
Welcome.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
So you stole talent from the Chancellor.
Yeah, right.
Not directly, but I'm not above that.
I do, and I hope I'm not out of bounds. I don't think I am, but... So I do want to make a motion that we go into executive session for one quick question. I think it qualifies for executive session. Will someone second that?
Second.
Go move.
Okay. Is there anything else? If not, we will move to Clara.
So, hi. We don't know me. I'm Clara Botvinnik. I'm the student representative. Basically, I have like a couple things I want to bring up. One, if concerns with what you're talking about before is dorms and stuff. A big issue that has been going on with the student population that we've been seeing is the fact that renovation of dorms is only going on the uptown campus, while like downtown alumni quad is kind of just left there. And I mean, obviously, you know, money has to be spent in a certain way, but at the same time, like those who live in alumni, not all of us live there by choice. It's sometimes because there is no more room on the uptown campus, and the fact that like the downtown campus isn't that bad because I live there myself. But it's just there's certain things that could potentially be improved, and if we're gonna start work and continue it on the uptown campus, then I feel like the downtown quad should also be looked at as something that is in need of improvement, especially because most of the transfer students that come into this university do end up there and they don't end up on campus. So if you want to continue this trend of transfer students coming, international students, foreign exchange students coming, this is definitely the first thing they get to see about our university, and then they go to like the big campus uptown. So I think that's definitely like a big point to kind of bring to your attention. Also, I wanted to talk about, this is like something a little bit more personal to me. So in April, it's going to be 3 years since I lost a good friend of mine to suicide. And we're doing, one of the organizations that I'm part of at school is called UA Live, and we're a suicide prevention fundraising group. And we're doing a walk in May with AFSP, it's called Out of the Darkness. And it happens behind in PM Quad. And there was a point in here when I was looking at the survey talking about the council's help with fundraising. And I think there's, you know, the school budget, especially the SA budget, is so small in a certain extent that it can't always help others. So I was definitely, you know, hoping that maybe this council could help with things like that, because suicide prevention has become like the second leading killer for college students, and it's definitely going to be important because, you know, we're all part of the university, and clearly the students are the ones that keep this university running, as well as the staff, so I definitely would like to bring that to your guys' attention, you know. I have, like, donation forms and sponsorships if you guys would like to do that. I can email them out and stuff, so I definitely would like your support on that. Also, Just lost my train of thought. That's what happens when you're 19. Yeah, so definitely the quads and stuff like that. Also, I was going to talk about the food like services that's been going on this year. Like, I know we've changed a bunch of them, but a bunch of them also have started to differentiate. Like, Wendy's used to be like meal trades, now it's only lunch money, and a lot of people don't get enough lunch money, they only get meal trades. So that's been a big issue that I've been hearing a lot about, that certain things are only offered through lunch money, and you know, certain individuals don't get as much, or they don't apply through certain plans because they, you know, cost more. Also, I don't know if you've talked to the president of Westlake, but there's this new thing going on about a $20 fee to add to a student fee to, you know, help out with a bunch of things, but it's never been specified to any students of what exactly are more $120 is going to. So I think that's like a big thing, because I don't know how well you keep in contact with the, you know, essay president, but a bunch of the people that work there, I keep in close contact with them, so I think it's very important to, you know, for the student population to know exactly where the extra money that they're going to be bringing in is going, because $120 may not seem like a lot, but to students who are already like on the brink of struggling to pay for school, it's definitely a little bit more than we already have.
Is this a $10 a month or $10? Is it, it's $120.
It's $120.
$60 a semester.
Yeah, is that what it is?
Okay. Yeah, and Ms., I don't want to interrupt your report, but it was one of the things that we kind of wanted to mention, but I think I definitely had talked long enough, so I'm glad that we moved on. But this is a campus-wide fee that we're proposing, and we've been working with SA about this issue, because we are one of the few campuses in terms of the university centers that don't have some kind of campus-wide fee that students pay. And this campus-wide fee is intended primarily to address a critical issue that I hear almost several times a semester when the weather is warm enough for me to spend time on the podium interacting with students. They complain about, they say, one of the reasons you see us getting on those buses every Friday afternoon heading to Manhattan or someplace, because there's nothing to do here on the weekend. Absolutely nothing. And I can tell you, I'm absolutely appalled at the amount of money that our Student Success Office have in their budget to support late night program and weekend programming for our students. Is woefully inadequate. It's just really not enough. And so what we're looking at is what we can do. And my office, as we go through the budget process, we'll be looking at how we can find some resources to upgrade that budget. But at the same time, knowing that in order to do this right, we need to do what some of the other university centers have done. Not all of them. That is having a kind of a campus-wide fee that's used to cover and finance some of this late night program. So it's all about how do you have the money to put on programs and activities that students can get engaged with, so they don't have to go home or come to Manhattan every weekend.
But don't we already have $45?
I was going to ask, isn't there already a fee?
Yeah, there's a student fee that's, if I'm not mistaken, it's $45. It might be, I might be a little bit off. I haven't checked
there's
what
always
I pay lately.
There was a fee when I was here.
It doesn't cover the kinds of things we're talking about.
No, I'm just asking.
It does, yeah. That $45, what does it go to, Steve?
Some it's of a it student is association.
Student association.
The SA fee, yeah, right. Student association.
It's been around for,
and they pretty much determine how that money is.
We don't have any say over how
no
they distribute those dollars.
So what would be the difference with $120? Wouldn't that be going to SAN?
No, that would go to the student success.
No. Right to student success, Claire.
Because I've read so much about it, or the people I've talked to, because I was just at the town hall meeting the other day that the students have, and they briefly touched up on it, and then you have, you know, half of the senators saying, oh, this is great, this is wonderful, and the other half saying, no, this is bad, and we don't even know what it is. So that's, like, the biggest problem, you know. How are we going to know whether or not we want to support it if we don't even know what it's going to, you know? Right. Like, I definitely didn't, and I probably know a little bit more about it than most people do, just because I keep in contact with people who work in that.
Well, it's an important issue, and it's important. We started out by initially just talking to the leadership of SA about whether or not this was a good idea, and it's very clear that we need to do more to be very transparent about what this fee is about.
where the funds would reside and what they're intended to do. And so I appreciate your perspective on this.
I'm sure, as anybody knows, I'm going through the college search program process right now. And every place I go, they don't talk about the fee, although I'm sure it's buried in the $250,000 I'm going to pay. But they talk about what the kids can do. Yeah. You know, here are the, that's one of the main things. Here are the activities that they have, and they are significant, and they run, you know, run the gamut. So I think that's, somehow we have to compete. Somehow we have to provide programming that does not include a bus.
And yeah. I totally understand that because in recent times, even when you're talking about earlier about enrollment and how it's gone down, so I think it's because you all been used to be known for so many things that like have been there for the route. And it's like a tradition. It's like, you know, your parents' friends have gone to Albany. They went through it, and then you go to Albany, and then you go through it, like, you know, various activities. And now it's like those things aren't really present on campus anymore, so our campus doesn't really feel like a community. It feels more like a school in and out. Like, we do have, like, things like park class and stuff.
You just repeated what I hear repeatedly as I walk on the podium and talk to particular undergrads. There's no real opportunity to develop that sense of community. And this, folks, if you don't invest resources to do this, it makes this whole enrollment strategy that we're talking about much more difficult.
As well as the alumni fundraising.
Absolutely. Well, that's everything is connected. This is all connected because I tell our enrollment management folks all the time, the best recruiters for this university are the students that graduate from here.
Yeah.
And they can have a wonderful experience inside the classroom, but if they don't come away with that strong sense of community, which I'm sure all of you must have had, otherwise you probably wouldn't be sitting around this table, whether it was at UAlbany or some other institution.
Bring back Fountain Day, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Be careful.
We were on a roll.
I was going to say that. I've spent Fountain Day for a number of years, and it was really great.
Let me just go on the record right now, folks, so you can fire me and get it over with. It's not going to happen under my watch because I've watched the videos. It started out very, very positive. For a number of years, it was a very positive community building event. Then it morphed into this thing that, frankly, I was embarrassed. The actions that I saw from our students and the fact that I'm really surprised that someone hasn't died or been severely injured.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I'm sorry, I can't support it because the liability is too great. It will be irresponsible for me to support something like this when I know that there are other ways to build traditions that students can be proud of and come away with a strong sense of community. That fountain has been redesigned in a way that makes it even less conducive for the kinds of antics that went on during Fountain Day. It really is a big liability, folks, and if you don't believe me, we'd be more than happy to post some of the videos in the last 3 or 4 years that you can watch on your own. And I'm absolutely convinced you will come away with the same sense of concern that I have as president of this university. And I think that a lot of students actually were concerned and embarrassed by some of the antics that occurred.
When do you think that will be possibly finished? Because we've been hearing it's supposed to be finished in October.
Steve, you want to talk about the reason that it wasn't finished last fall?
Yeah, because the weather got it had to do with the subcontractor that's going to spread the last floor on the fountain floor itself. He didn't get it done. There wasn't much we could do to make it happen. It's supposed to be here this in April with a big enough crew to get it done. So we're very optimistic that
but
we'll
it probably
have
has to be a certain temperature.
It does. It does.
It has to be over a certain temperature before you.
And it
happened. It's
not going to happen.
You see all the plants. No. It's all pretty light.
And also, there was some problem with some of the materials.
Yes, we also had to tear up some terrazzo that was installed but was substandard.
It wasn't going to stand up. Reinstalled. So we're not using that particular test.
So I want to. Okay.
Commencement. It'll be done by commencement.
Just one question on the student fees.
Sorry.
I'm sure not covered by TAP, but maybe student loans and Pell Grants would cover part of those fees. They're probably eligible for that. Or if not, is there some mechanism for the students that need, that full need, that really can't afford that extra kick? Or how does that work?
Fees are not covered under those.
You can't borrow for your
part, part of the
you can't borrow for your
yes, but yeah, the Stafford loan they are, but maybe a SUNY initiative, maybe a TAP related fee. I know that increases in TAP may not happen, but it may be something to.
I know the grants don't cover our fees, but our loans do. Because I know my grants will cover like my classes, but then my loans will cover anything actually the university asks.
Anyway, this is an important issue. We decided it was time to put it on the table. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we're also trying to deal with some other fee issues regarding access to facilities, that graduate students have access to some of our Rexport facilities. And most of the fee that is used to cover that comes from the undergraduate side of the house. That's another issue of kind of parity that we're trying to address it as well. But,
okay, I'm going to try to move us along.
Despite the fact that these fees may be covered by loans, this is something that we were discussing a year ago, as to how severe the loan and debt situation is getting. Find that while that may be like short-term mitigation, it still means that at 120 per semester over the course of graduate students, or an undergraduate 4 years here, that'll come out to pretty close to another grant in loans that walk down with.
Noted.
That's Jim.
Noted. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, Jim, that's Gary.
Okay. That's Gary.
Was it Gary? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was Gary.
I'm sorry. Sorry, Gary.
Yeah, that was Gary. Sorry.
The Governance Council update. Gov has been very busy over the past several months, and one of the first things we did in December was to draft a resolution regarding the three vacant seats that resulted in the resignation of the CNSC senators. So we addressed that, and what we decided to do is reapportion those seats evenly among the next 44 school and college assignments. We also have been working for a very long time on a charter amendment re the composition of CPCA, Council on Promotion and Continuing Appointment, because of information that was brought to us about a conflict in the union contract and our charter and bylaws. And finally, I'm happy to report that we have, let's see, it's all marked up. We have approved the rationale for the amendment, and we hope to bring that to the Senate for conversation and then pass it at the following Senate meeting. We've also been working on redesigning, or not really redesigning, but repurposing the focus of one of the councils, which is the Committee on Academic Freedom, Freedom of Expression, and Community and Responsibility, also called CAFE Corps. And what the focus of that, what we want to do is to make sure that it will focus on issues that were created when that council was first formed. And so the principle is that the widest possible scope for freedom of expression is the foundation of an institution dedicated to vigorous inquiry, robust debate, and continuous search for a proper balance between freedom and community responsibility. So this is an amendment that's in the making. It's not finalized yet, but that is something that we're working on. Governance is also one of the charges of governance is to self-assess the faculty, professional staff, and students' views about shared governance and consultation. So we have drafted a survey. That's why I was curious about that survey. And we've been working with the president's office on the survey, and we hope to finalize that survey and disseminate it in March, the end of March, to faculty, professional staff, and students. And then share that with the Senate, because one of the things that I think is really important is that this governance and shared governance is shared. It's shared throughout the university, it's shared with faculty, professional staff, students, and the administration. And so we need to take a pulse on what we're doing and what we can do better. And where we're falling short, we need to educate, reach out more. So I'm very happy to have student involvement, which brings me to the point that one of the things that the president raised about the CNSE Utica merger is if students are on campus then and they wish to participate in the Senate, as we have some students from CNSE, so that would be something that of course I'm chair of Gov and would need to talk to the council members, but our opinion always has been welcomeness to that. So I don't know if that has been brought up in any of the conversations. Any questions?
Questions? I have one. It sounds like that's a pretty comprehensive survey that you're going to put out. Is that the only survey that the university does, or does the administration do a survey? Or I'm just wondering about how many, who's asking the questions and from what perspective. So is that the only survey?
On governance, on issues of governance?
Is it specific to just the issues of governance, or is it campus life? Is it?
No, it doesn't.
It's
do
just
it.
Governance.
Right.
It's, oh, okay. Okay.
It's yeah, shared governance, okay. And consultation.
Anything else?
There is a conference coming up sponsored by the president of the Student Faculty Senate and college trustees, Tina Goodwin, in April. On shared governance, and it may fit into what we're going to talk about. ACT is going to hopefully take an active role in that on governance. So it'll be the first conference. And
right, I actually want to attend. So, yes, I think it's important. Thank you for bringing
it. Okay. Gary, are you with us? Gary?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So. This report is going to be pretty brief. The primary focus of recent GSA activities has been on the internal organization of the GSA, as well as our relationship with the administration. A lot of focus has been put particularly on two aspects. One is the presidential forum, which is something that's always a very intense topic of discussion in the review meeting. We very much appreciate our efforts to be involved in some back and forth discussion over the relationship of our interaction and role in forming these forums versus the role of the undergraduate. But everything going forward is smoothly there. The other aspect that we're working on our relationship in terms of our interaction with the university administration is the role of our MCAA chair, Multicultural Affirmative Action chairperson, who to this point the GSA has sort of had very limited explicit responsibility for, and what we're doing there is laying groundwork for how that individual can be more involved with the campus. With the diversity office in order to better facilitate a multicultural attitude throughout the graduate student body and hopefully assisting community building in that way. One of the big events that typically occupy a lot of graduate student attention are often those MCAA events, so it's going to be very large. The other two issues to report on is that there has been a significant amount of turnover in the current GSA administration. Mostly people we had three resignations because of the workload of this year, which has proved too intense for them. And we've had appointments that have been since confirmed by our assembly. So in the event that any of you interact with the GSA e-board, the president has on more than one occasion, then this would be why they'd like to see some new faces. And finally, that we're working through the final stages of our bylaws, which should be ratified at some point in April. And that concludes my report.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Is there a report from Tim?
Tim, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tim. I didn't know you were with us.
Anything? Anything to report?
Yes. As I've stated in the past, I guess, the overarching goal of the Alumni Association is to work with the university in establishing a lifelong connection with its alums, and in that regard, most of our programs have that, whether it's homecoming or the gold events, have that goal in mind. And in that vein, the Alumni Association has recently begun a new program, which we call UAlbany Connect. It is specifically targeted at the Metro New York area and the Capital District area, which are the homes of a huge bulk of our alums, at least initially. We may expand it in the future, depending on how it goes. We've already set up a variety of events in both the Metro New York and Capital District area. We mail postcards to targeted alumni in both areas, inviting them to come to the events. We've emailed all alumni for whom we have email addresses in those areas, pointing out both reminding them that a postcard should have arrived in the mail, and if it didn't, that we have websites set up where they can go and see the dates and locations for events. And as part of that as well, we're offering a promotion, a getaway weekend to Saratoga Springs during the track season. So somebody who will attend an event, and the more events you attend, the more entries you get. So somebody will be winning a very nice weekend for Saratoga Springs, all of which is just part of our ongoing effort to stay connected, to get connected, and to have the alums want to be continuing their connection to the university. I was interested in the Fountain Day discussion. I know that's off the radar, and maybe it should be. But the homecoming event that we had last year was a new effort for us. As you may recall, it was wildly successful, and we intend to pursue that in the hopes of turning that into the kind of signature event that people every year will look forward to at least once. Back campus in conjunction with the sporting event and other activities on campus, continuing and keeping up their connection to UAlbany, which we all love and want to see.
Thank you. Any questions of Tim? Seeing none, we'll move to new business.
Mr. Can I?
You're the president. You can do whatever you want.
In our lengthy, detailed discussion on the first two items, I failed to give you just an update on where we stand in terms of the budget, which I think also is something you differently about the whole budget process. And then just want to give you a brief update on a couple of other personnel issues, if I may. So I apologize for having a bifurcated report here. But UA's request this year is, we kind of, the process we use, you kind of back into your request based on what the governor has put on the table. And we know he put his budget proposal out about a month ago. And what we are asking for is in response to, in part, some critical needs, but also things that were not included in his original budget proposal. Under NY SUNY 2020, there was supposed to be a maintenance of effort that would cover the cost of union employees. And in the budget proposal this year, we are mandated more or less to give the increases, and we've already started that process. Mm-hmm. We gave increases for 2013, and there are others in play for 2014. And unless that is restored in the budget, it essentially can be as much as a $9 million essentially cut to our operating budget. because we've had to go ahead and deliver those increases, even though the funds were not supposed to be coming out of the revenue generated by NYC in 2020. And frankly, folks, that's the only place where we can get the money. So essentially, it will be a cut. And this translates as to as much as $9 million, or at least as many as 50 of those 235 faculty positions that we were supposed to be creating or adding under NYC in 2020 that will not happen.
Was that an oversight or was it a conscious decision?
I think it was. It must have been very conscious, because it's part of the agreement, you know, that this is supposed to be, the effort was supposed to be maintained, and essentially the new revenue from the $300 that we are able to increase tuition each and every year was going to be the funds that we would use to finance the expansion of enrollment,
right,
to get us to 1,300 students and to hire these 280 faculty members. And now we would have to divert some of that money, and Steve, tell me if I'm wrong.
No, you're not.
And that's the only way we can pay for these union increases that have been approved by the legislature, but then we have to cover it costs. And so that is one of the issues that not only you all will be advocating for, but the whole student system is going to be advocating for that as well. And so that's one of the places where our priorities align with SUNY. The other place is the governor has in his budget proposal approximately $500 million for critical maintenance issues. We think that's a good start. You all know we still face the $1.2 billion that we faced this time last year and growing. And SUNY System Administration has decided that we need to double that amount. And so we're advocating for $1 billion worth of critical maintenance, which means that our fair share would be roughly, about $56 million or so?
Yes, exactly right. Out of the $500 million, our share is 28.6. So
right.
It's 57.2. It would double our share.
If you remember the last decade, the university has received over $320 million, and that's been critically important to allow the renovation of the fountain and the other renovations that are going on in the dormitories, as well as the lecture hall on the podium as well. So we certainly hope we can get back to a point where we have a long-term strategy for capital projects rather than these one-off kinds of situations that we're in now. And I'll wrap up here in a minute. Just a FYI, legislative visits are scheduled for March 34th, where we will be spending essentially most of those 2 days at the legislature talking one-on-one with our legislative delegation about our needs and advocating for what we need at the university. One critical component as well that we were really surprised wasn't funded, since it's the revenue, the resources. We weren't asking anything from the state. As a part of our NYC 2020 strategy, that was supposed to be the first parking garage. I still absolutely amazed when I came to UAlbany and I said, well, where are the garages? They must be underground. I know there must be garages underground, only to learn that we don't have any garages. But under 2020, we were supposed to be getting our first garage as a part of the ETEC project. And unfortunately, all we'd asked for was the approval to go to a design build process so that we could bring that garage online and save ourselves about $1.2 million if we don't get started right away. And unfortunately, that was not approved. And so what we're only asking for is the approval to use our own resources to build this facility, and we're having a bit of difficulty getting that through as well. So any of you that has direct line, we're going to be talking about your roles and responsibility. If you have the ability to influence any of this for a positive outcome, we certainly would appreciate it. This garage is a big deal, and it's critically important that we do now. Otherwise, it's going to cost us at least another $1.2 million if we have to delay. And the rest of their...
Why did someone not approve that? Or is that an oversight problem?
No, it was not.
I mean, that's just meanness.
Capital budget.
Anyway, I'm just here to provide the information, not to explain it, so let's move on. We're also, SUNY Day is April 29th and 30th, so as plans develop, we'll make you aware of that, so we plan to participate in that as well. And I'm going to forego any discussions about fundraising updates unless Fardeen wants to say something there. And lastly, just want to talk to you about a couple of searches and things that are going on. You just met Leanne. As you know, we were doing a search for a CFO. We were not able to make a hire out of that search process, and that continues. Someone that Steve has been trying to retire for decades. And, no, I'm sorry, just a couple of years.
He's not replaceable.
He's looking kind of tired.
And unfortunately, we thought we had a potential replacement. It didn't work out, and we continued to search. But we've given the search firm and the search committee a notice that this has to wrap up by April 15th. Otherwise, I'll be the CFO, and then you'll see how you go from there. That's a scary thought. Anyways,
we'll have some new buildings at least.
Let me just end with a couple more, Mrs. Chair. I do apologize.
This is
important, I think. We also, you know, we restructured the chief of staff portfolio. As you know, Vince DeLeo was both the chief of staff and government relations person. I made a decision probably mid-year last year that that was not the model that I thought was giving us the most effective strategies and effectiveness going forward. That led to hiring Leanne, and Leanne is now in the process of interviewing potential candidates for the government relations position. At this day and age, and the kinds of things I just told you about, that position is absolutely critical. And so we're going to be moving forward. Hopefully in the next few days or so, she's going to be coming forward with a recommendation
for tomorrow.
So we'll have a government director, the relations director tomorrow, so that's great. Just one other confidential matter that it absolutely has to remain confidential.
I think you might want to consider executive session.
While Steve is working on that, also the marketing and communication.
Yes, okay. Well, while they're doing that,
go ahead.
The other change that I made, as you recall, last fall was we transitioned out the vice president for communications and marketing. We passed it over to Fardeen to manage that entity, and I can tell you he did an amazing job of helping that unit to continue to stay focused, not just to stay focused and maintain status quo, they actually advanced the marketing and communication agenda significantly. First time we've ever had billboards, and I apologize, violated my own principle about cell phones. Leanne has a lot of background and experience in communications, in fact, her undergraduate degree is in journalism, if I remember correctly. And so we've now passed the oversight for the communication marketing unit to her. She's looking at a recommendation from the consultants we had hired to Belfort, and Bob Belfort, Steve Greenberg were hired to give us an assessment of that unit, what needs to be done going forward. Leanne is looking at that, and we hope to have a permanent solution about where that unit is going to reside within the administrative structure and how it's going to move forward. Because again, in where we live, in the capital, communications in some university is a nice thing to have. You live and die by it in this community, and we realize how important this is. Then lastly, are we off the record?
No, not yet.
We need a motion to go into executive session. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Okay. Council is of the utmost importance and our first role and responsibility, so that goes without saying. We'll move quickly to
ask a quick question?
Sure.
Is she staying?
We're back in open session. The new business, the update on Schuyler School acquisition?
That would be me. James Jackson asked for this update. That's why it's on the agenda. You know, we bought the Schuyler School. We were thrilled to get it, $2 million purchase price. The deed got finally recorded in November, so it's ours, lock, stock, and barrel. Building was built in 1912, 127,000 gross square feet. It's a big building, takes up a 2.69 acre footprint. And its addition increases our downtown square footage by a full 30%. So it's been really, really good addition for us. That's the good news. Long term, it needs a gut renovation. Much of what you would see inside also dates to 1912. It's going to cost about $47 million in last year's dollars to get that done eventually. We set aside $6.2 million in capital money out of money that we already had in hand to address near-term needs. Replaced some pretty scary heating plant components. Looked like something on a Frankenstein movie in the basement this year. So we've got it stabilized with respect to heat. We fixed the roof. Spent about $1 million doing that, removing asbestos. We drilled a hole in the sub-basement, and of course, crude oil bubbled up. So we had to abate oil leaks that occurred over the years. So there's all sorts of remediation that needed to be done. Eventually, it'll be used for mixed use academic and research, school of social welfare. We'll move over there from Richardson. That will give us the swing space to renovate Richardson. This is a big part of our facilities master plan. We're going to consolidate some units in Rockefeller College that are co-located now in other places. We'll be able to bring them back into the fold. We'll have additional classroom space, all good, so we can program down there and take some of the load off the classroom. It'll give us more capacity, basically, and the academic podium now uptown is overloaded with respect to scheduling. And we'll also be able to relocate some academic units from uptown down to the building, or into Richardson, one of the rehab buildings, in order to give a swing space on the podium to get busy. Couple more thoughts. We've kicked off the state Environmental Quality Review Act process to address the environmental impacts of our change of use from K-12 to higher education. We've included collective impacts of parking. We're planning on doing a deck on the current Thurlow Terrace lot. We need to talk to the neighbors about that. As you can expect, we're getting some pushback. We're going to expand and renovate Page Hall as part of this, another domino to fall. And we'll add an addition potentially to Hawley. So reviewing all those things with respect to Seeker. All of these we've discussed before, part of the facilities master plan, part of our grand scheme, and all we need is money.
So I'm going to ask an annoying question, but it was from the accounting degree that I got at the University of Auburn. But we're going to pay $400 a square foot? $400 a square foot is class AAA space. Why would we pay that much for
In large part because it's so proximate to the downtown campus. There was no other place to
who do we pay
to do anything down. Pardon me?
Who do we pay the
city
of
Albany?
Was it the city of Albany?
Yeah. City school district. Oh, for the $2 million? The school district owned it.
So we paid $2 million. Now we're paying approximately $47 million. So it's $49 million for the whole place.
Because government.
A lot of
That just seems like an awful. I mean, I'm sure those are the correct numbers, which is why I'm saying. I mean, you could, you know, you're only building 127,000 square feet.
Why couldn't you have just?
I've got 127,000 square feet. I'll give you my building for half of that.
So
you're done. I've got classrooms. I've got. I mean, that's just a huge. In relative terms, sure. I know it's government contracting.
And designs and SUNY and government design standards, which are different than private sector.
You can build the same property that we can build for half of what costs us after we go broke saving the state money.
You couldn't have bought it. You gut it and do it brand new.
Yeah.
Wasn't that school refurbished just a couple of years
No.
ago? No. Because I know I worked with the teachers and they all had to move out for a year while they got.
I've been all through the building, Gillette, and I haven't seen anything remotely looking like rehab space. Anyway, it's part of the capital plan, it's in the works.
But you can understand from a real world perspective, it doesn't make sense.
Somehow, and I wish I knew all of the mechanisms, and I should, but across Fuller Road, they're somehow using different metrics to be able to, because of their ability to build and lease back.
Yes.
Well, first of all, it's a ground lease.
It's a ground lease.
And second of all, you know this, it's a whole different scenario that when we designed that whole thing years and years ago, it was deliberately set up as a totally separate type of avoid exactly this kind of stuff.
In hindsight, it probably should have had the foundation by Schuyler.
You don't have the same building issues and requirements and things like that.
Which is what we were trying to get to with the parking deck on campus. We wanted to do that as a ground lease, and that's what got knocked out of the building.
You can't compare what they're doing to what's being done.
But isn't there? But there's no more cost-efficient way than that?
The school business building, I thought the contractor that did that, I thought they had some sort of special dispensation and at least were able to use...
PLAs, probably?
Somehow they trimmed some of the cost.
It was still a $50 million project.
Given that the foundation could have done that for $36 million.
Right. That's... Yeah.
Well, it's always cheaper to do it.
Do it commercially. Yeah, that's right.
The design build is, if you can imagine, if we can't do this by design build, it almost makes it cost prohibitive.
Well, you got these ancillary issues that come up when you're not doing a sewer 501c3, because you're doing it at the university. Union issues. I'm telling you, it's always more expensive. Right. That's why this whole thing was done. That's why SUNY IT was done the way I designed SUNY IT.
Well, I was going to say, can the foundation purchase it now?
Maybe, but then how would we pay for it? We've got state capital behind this project now. We wouldn't be able to use that money. So we have to come up with our own. Maybe say we could do it cheaper.
How much is the state funding?
All of it.
Yeah, but it's funded in a different way. It's got a different spot on the on the legislative list.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Would we be eligible for some of this economic development money for that project?
Maybe eligible, but whether or not you get it is a question.
Well, you're chair of the committee, right?
Well, save the state $20 million,
No, seriously, it's the kind of projects that they've been looking. I mean, that's some of the kinds of projects they've been funding around the state, it seems to me.
Michael will tell you what a hard road to hold that will be.
And that would kill his reputation. Right, so you can't bring that forward.
It's SUNY Construction's doing it. Yeah. It's not a third party. You don't have competitive bidding and all this, right? It's a whole different
scenario. No ground lease, no revenue source stream to...
It's a totally different animal, and this is why a lot of campuses started looking at this other way to do it.
We think it's an attractive project because...
Oh, yeah, sure it is. It's just that the cost is, by definition, high.
Yeah. Yeah.
The cost you're talking about would be roughly comparable to what it costs to build a research facility, which is usually between $300 and $400 a square foot.
Yeah, but it's not a brand new
special area.
That's what Mike said. You could gut the whole place and build a brand new one.
They don't need
and
like exactly
you get a brand new building.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, literally, it's interesting. That's on 2.69 acres. It's not comparable. We'll move on. But I've got 11 acres in a beautiful gym. You can have it all. Half the place. All right. Let's move on. Is there any other questions on that? Okay. So, Fardeen, positive and negative. So we want to thank Fardeen for arranging for the space for us and arranging for the food and for all of those wonderful things, but there's nothing that is ever free with Fardeen. So in exchange for that, he slipped in another naming resolution.
Well, that's good.
That's good.
So I need to I need a motion to accept a waiver of advance notice so that we can consider this motion. Any objection? Seeing none, then that is approved. Then we can address the motion that you all should have in front of you.
Michael, this is Jim Clancy. By any chance, is that sent to us?
Steve, was that sent out?
It wasn't in the packet.
No, it wasn't in the packet. It was too late. It just got to us yesterday. I'll see if I can get the chairman to read it into the record.
It's not in the package that went out by email.
So I'll read the motion.
It wasn't in the package that went out by email.
Whereas William L. Reese, PhD, Emeritus Professor of Philosophy, University of Albany, has pledged a gift of $500,000 to the University at Albany Foundation to support the Emeritus Center of the University at Albany, of which $100,000 already has been received by the foundation, and whereas opened in November 2006, the Emeritus Center, of which Professor Reese was the founding president, serves retired faculty and professional and administrative staff designated as emeriti by sponsoring programs designed to facilitate and promote the educational and scholarly mission of the university. And whereas the university, in recognition of this generous gift and pledge, wishes to name the Emeritus Center the Reese Emeritus Center, and whereas the university, in further recognition and appreciation of this gift and pledge, wishes to name the Emeritus Center in honor of professional Reese in perpetuity, Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Emeritus Center at the University at Albany hereinafter shall be named in perpetuity the Reese Emeritus Center in recognition of the very generous gift and pledge of Professor William L. Reese. Would somebody make that motion to get it on the table?
So moved.
Second. Discussion on the motion.
I would assume that falls in the SUNY guidelines. That
yes, this recognition opportunity is in line with the previously approved guidelines of the University Council and University of Albany.
Is there any contingency, not that this ever happens, you know, and I don't know this person, so I'm talking in generality, not with this particular person, but often there's an out in case something bad happens, either the person doesn't fulfill it or they go to jail or do something where we don't want their name. Do we have any kind of provisions for that anywhere?
In the memorandum of understanding, the foundation that has with Professor Reese that says if the use for these changes or anything happens that is harmful to the university, the University at Albany Foundation Board has the right to redesignate this gift.
But if we're the ones that are doing it, should that be here?
No, it goes in the MOU, and what happened was years ago, remember I brought this up many years ago, and yes, it was then put in from that on that said that if certain things happen, like felony convictions, all this kind of stuff, then, you know, there would be an opportunity. It doesn't need to be there, but it's in the signed MOU, which is better, because this doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You want it in the MOU that's signed by
the gift agreement.
Put the gift in.
I agree with all of that, but I thought we're the only one that has the authority to authorize a name.
That's really subject to the terms and conditions of the MOU.
Right.
Okay.
Then what it should say, to you again.
Frank would come back. There should be a whereas in there. It says that we approve it subject to the terms and conditions of the MOU.
That's, I guess, what I was looking for.
That's what would be the right thing to kind of close the loop on.
Right.
Boilerplate going forward.
Yeah, I agree with saying.
John, but you could add that, correct?
But that you would just make a motion to add an additional whereas clause that says something to the effect that, the resolution is adopted contingent to the inclusion of a whereas clause, something to the effect that that the terms and conditions of the MOU would be followed, including any restrictions on further use of the name subject to, you know, character issues or something. You know.
Would the maker, would the two that made the motion, second the motion, agree to that?
Yes.
Then it's amended for that. Any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? None. Approved. Thank you.
Michael, may I use this opportunity to give a fundraising update?
Sure.
Just three quick items. As of January 31st, we were up about 34% compared to last year in our fundraising dollars, and our audited numbers for last year's endowment performance was 11.9%, and we were second campus among the three SUNY centers as far as performance of our endowment. Buffalo was 12%. Stony Brook was 10.4, and Binghamton was 11%. Overall portfolio that we're managing is just over $50 million. Our endowment is right around $45 million at the university. And also one item, that the million-dollar goal that we had for the Jones Scholarship, we are around 70% mark of our goal right now. And next week, we are having a foundation meeting at 4 o'clock at the Hearst Tower, followed by a reception and at 6 o'clock. I hope you all join us.
Again?
Next Thursday, 6th. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
If there is nothing else, a motion to it. I don't know what we're doing. I think we need to talk about that a little bit more. My legal counsel on this side of the table has been putting things in front of me that says that it doesn't appear that we have any, there, as John was saying, there is no wiggle room on going into executive session on this topic or turning the recording off.
Well, there is. I feel strongly that our rights as board members, I'm not sure that we have been doing it in a way that was intended by the legislation. So I may bring an amicus suit against whoever I need to in order to perhaps fully flesh out our rights as a board member. So
since there's a potential lawsuit on the table, and that is a matter that is allowable to go into executive session, I, Mr. Chairman, make a motion to go into executive session and discuss this matter.
Well, is there a second to that?
Come on, John. John, I've helped you out lots of times before. Come on.
I think it's a little far-fetched, but you know, it certainly serves the purpose.
That's my word.
Second. Thank you. It's a pretty qualified second, I think. Well, why don't we go into executive session to discuss the issue? All right. I think at least that gets us there. As to the issue of how do we handle this?
And certainly at the end of that session, okay. Rather feel different.
I'll come back and I'll say, change my mind.
So we're now in executive.
Okay.
Does somebody make a motion to adjourn?
Second.
We're adjourned.
Okay.